Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And we're reaching way back into the Steiner Show archives this hour to hear a conversation I did with boxing legend, former heavyweight champ of the world, Joe Frazier. Let me know your thoughts by tweeting us at Mark Steiner, commenting on our Facebook page, or send us an email to talk@steinershow.org. I'm Mark Steiner, sitting here with none other than the former world heavyweight champion of the world, smoking Joe Frazier. Joe, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much, Mark. How you been?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Lord, been good to me.
That's true.
I travel around the world with my oldest son. He found that Marvis. Fine job. Yeah, mm-hmm. Marvis. Working a lot on me, but...
Marvis is sitting here with us two folks.
I can deal with it for a while, and sometimes I pull him aside and look, son, daddy's tired, okay? I think he understands. I didn't have to, you know. Marvis, what are we doing? I pull him aside. Come here, son. I said, daddy's tired, okay?
Joe, let me ask you this question. Why write this book now? What made you do this now?
Everybody all over the world have given their thoughts and their idea about Smokin' Joe, about the fight world, about people who I've come in contact with over the years. So now, while everybody quiet down, and let me talk a little bit and let them get a chance to know Smokin' Joe, what I'm all about, where I come from, what I'm doing. Now, I can't tell you where I'm going.
But none of us can do that. None of us can do that.
I can't tell you where I'm going, but I'm thinking about it. You know? I'm doing my best to go to bed. I'm thinking about doing the right thing. Okay.
Well, you seem to always done the right thing for the most part.
Yeah, well, the most important thing, this everything is people. You know what I mean? I don't care where you come from, what you look like, it is people, it's you that the ones involved. You know what I mean? We get up in the morning, you know, I got a thing that I get up in the morning and I see a person, I don't know him. Good morning, how are you?
Right.
You know what I mean? It is people. I mean, that's the way I brought up as a little boy, you know?
And you wrote a lot about in the beginning of your book, which I loved, because I never knew your story about growing up. You grew up in South Carolina, in the country, Beaufort,
yeah.
South Carolina.
Blink your eyes and you're through the town.
Now, why did you... Now, tell us a story about how you got the name Billy Boy when you were a kid.
Daddy was a great daddy.
And yeah, you loved your father. You really loved him, didn't you?
I don't know how daddy got Billy out of Joseph, okay?
But, that was great.
But he was a... He was a bootlegger. Uh-huh. He was a farmer. He was a father. He was a great father. And what he done, he had a car. And the car was always there, dependable. No, A-mile or T-mile, whatever it was. It was a get-around, and the car was always dependable. So I was like the car. Whenever he called, I was always there. I used to go with my daddy. I used to, like, sit beside his room, you know what I mean, so he can run out on me. You know what I'm saying? Like, they slip out on you.
That's right.
Oh, he's sleeping. No, I was supposed to sleep by the room door watching. He was going to get away from me. And I love that guy.
Now, you used to help your father with the bootleg operation and what you were talking about in the book. And you even drove the car and made deliveries yourself sometimes.
Yeah, my dad, I used to cook the liquor. I know how to set up a still.
Can you still do it?
This is not for the law. You know?
No, we're just hypothetically here.
There you go.
Hypothetically.
That's all. Yeah. I'll just put something together. You want to go with me?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. It's really not a hard job to do. It's just something that you have to learn, and you learn it well. I know how to do it, but it was more fun, and I think it was money in the pocket for dad, and probably help pay some of the bills and buy some of the groceries or whatever.
When you think about the relationship you had with your father and how tight and close you all were and how close you are to Marvis, your own son, and your other children.
Yep.
And you look at what's going on in the world today, especially in the poor communities, inside the poor inner city communities where fathers are gone. What strikes you about that? What does that say to you?
I just feel like... my love for my kids, they are part of me. And, you know, my brothers and my sisters, I get mad with them a little bit of while. I don't see them for a couple of weeks or more. But my kids, man, they are part of me. I mean, I have to love them, and I have to see that they are all right, because mama carried them for 9 months. And the first word they utter, she said, mama, he said, dad. So I do love these kids, man. And, it, you know, the walk around and, you know, when they said, look around, you know, they don't call me Joe, Smoking Joe, Daddy.
They call you Daddy.
That's right.
But what do you think is going on as you look at it? Because you wrote in the book about, you wrote about how when you were growing up, the communities in the South, poor black communities, everybody kind of came together and struggled together and survived together. What do you think has happened? I mean, as you walk around and see and you go to high schools and meet kids that you do, what do you think has happened
this
things to be falling apart?
This is leadership. This is leadership here in the radio station. You got to have the right guy leading. I mean, if you look at the leader, you know what the hell the follower going to be all about. Simple as that. And father is the man of the house, and mom is the householder. You know what I mean? They put the two together, and the kids got to realize mama and daddy are your slave. You go to them and say, hey, Dad, I need a car. What you want? I need a Viper.
Now, when you
20 about $60,000, yes, Dad. Can I have that car, please? And the first thing Daddy gonna say, he gonna work the next day. He be thinking, I get that boy a car. The boy asked for a car. So therefore, hey, once kids have respect in their home, you know, for mom and daddy, it'd be great, man. You know, we are our kids' slaves. And it shouldn't be any problem why
we are.
They can't
you're absolutely
listen.
Right about that.
Hey, why they can't listen? I don't understand why. My mama and daddy had 13 of us, and we don't have.
And
no
you were
problem.
The baby.
I'm the youngest, and I still love my brothers and sisters. I respect them.
Let me introduce you, even though people can hear that voice and know who it is. My guest this hour is Smokin' Joe Frazier. He just put out an autobiography called Smokin' Joe. Join us here at 662-8780, 662-8780, to talk with Joe Frazier, former heavyweight champion of the world, 662-8780. When you were a kid, they said, who was it that told you were going to be another Joe Louis when you were like
another
8 years
Joe
old?
Louis. Well, my daddy and all the uncles and older guys together, around living in the house on the porch, the stoop, whatever they call it back in them days. And I guess they'd break out some Pat Blue Ribbon.
I used to drink Pat Blue Ribbon.
Commercial.
PBR,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Little corn liquor. And then they used to watch, I think, Marciana as the Charles, Hurricane Jackson. All
Friday
them.
Night
yeah.
Fights, Gillette Friday Night and Fights, that, every Friday night,
and,
yes.
And I used to walk through, you know, I want them to see me anyway, so I used to walk through. As a little kid, Dad and the uncle say, you know that boy? That boy got a body like Joe Louis. That boy might be another Joe Louis one of these days. You know what I mean? And here I am. I grew up in the South, you know, feeling that I could make it. And where I come from, they didn't have any recreation center. Are you kidding? Not for me. They had them, but I couldn't go. You know what I mean?
Right,
my recreation was right in the yard. Playing with a, what you call the thing, a wheel? A bicycle rim?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Twirling it out.
Now, wait a minute. I got something else for you. You ever seen me and my buddy ride my horse?
No.
Oh, you got to get to this. A stick. We would get a broomstick, and he'd get on the back of the broomstick behind me, and then we'd run together. I'd give him a ride on my horse. You know, you know what?
There's a picture of you in this book where you are looking at Joe Louis, and you look like... Let me just turn this picture here real quick. There's a picture of you here looking at Joe Louis, and you look like you're saying, I can't believe I'm standing here looking at Joe Louis. Like you're looking at somebody that you just loved like a hero.
He was a great guy, man. He was really one great man.
He was a special guy.
He's a really a great guy.
There it is. This is it. There's the picture. Look at that. The way you look in this picture, Joe Frazier. Look at that. I mean, you look like you're saying, this is my hero. This is the man. That's Joe Louis.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he's something he was fine, man. You know, he didn't say too much. He didn't run his mouth. You're like the other guy.
Who are you talking about?
We talk about later. but, you know, when he said something, you know, you want to stay and listen, man, because he's a respectable guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was, and the main thing about it, he never got big. He never got fat. You know, he was always in shape like it.
Like
always
you.
Always there. Talked real slow and he got the point across.
Did you see him as a kind of a model for yourself in terms of how you want to live your life as a fighter and as a man?
Well, I would say the things that he must come up on the regiment and hard times and that was, you know what I mean? At the time, the things that he had to do to become a champion, and the backs he had to duck and hide and whatever to get the job done. So through all that, I respect guys like that, you know what I mean? I got to look at them and say, hey, man, your time had to have been rougher than mine because I caught some hell myself coming up. So I give respect to all those great guys that had to come up to that regiment. You know, and you know, we don't want to go from one to another. I can call a whole lot of guys' names, but yeah, they know what I'm saying and what I'm talking about. The problem that they went through to be champions, because that time black guys didn't get the opportunity to be a champion. So he must have went through a lot of yes and no and duck and dodge, and he had the job done.
You know, when people think of Philly, which is your hometown now, when you left South Carolina, eventually got to Philadelphia, they always think of Philly as the town of Rocky. You know, but and you said in your book, maybe I don't want to get in trouble here, but you said in the book that the thing
I like to talk about it.
That where the scene in Rocky where he was practicing in the meat house, hitting the meat, that you showed him that and you did it first.
I will challenge Stallone in anything that he wants to do. You hear me?
I hear you.
I didn't say one. I said anything that he wants to do. I could do it two times.
My money would be on you, Joe.
Hey, Henry. He wants to go to the slaughterhouse. I can cut out the steers. You know what I mean? You want to do a little movie? I can do a little acting. You know what I mean? Whatever, low fighting, whatever he wants to do, I can do it. And believe it, it wouldn't be no movie. I can do the real deal.
Joe, let's go to the phone here and let folks out in Baltimore have a chance to talk with you. My guest is Joe Frazier here on the Mark Steiner Show. Join us at 662-8780. And Reggie in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Joe.
Reggie, how are you?
It's a pleasure talking with you. In my opinion, you were the champion of all champions.
Thank you much, Reg.
Joe, I want to ask you a question about the money being paid. Excuse me one second.
Sure. Take your time.
The money being paid out this particular last 10 years for boxing, it's got to be kind of ridiculous. $25 million for a fight. In your opinion, what do you think about that?
Joe, go ahead.
Reg. Reggie, right?
Reggie, yeah.
Reggie, I don't really think that the money is ridiculous. I think that the guys deserve more money because it's. You ever been in a boxing gym before?
Not really.
Ever thought about putting the gloves on?
No.
You ever fought anybody?
Well, in my younger day.
Who?
In his younger days.
Back
my
in the day.
Day.
Did you like it?
No.
Did you get your nose bruised?
Yep, a couple times.
Did your brain shook?
No.
Well, I would say that it's not unfair, the money that they're getting now. It's probably fair money. The money could have been the same back in them days. I'm only mad because I ain't getting none of it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying, I started off and the best fight in the world that, let's say, Marcellus and I having now on TV, still selling a commercial, and we don't get a dime out of it. But the main thing about it, you know, the guys is getting the money. That's good. And you never can pay enough money, man, to climb through them four squares. I usually tell the guys in the gymnasium, once you come through the gym, though, you know, we're getting ready to read your obituary, okay? Off to you.
Right.
That's the way it is. But let's hope that, you know, they put the good money to use, you know what I mean?
Right.
For themselves. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And tell them don't forget Uncle, all right?
Reggie.
And what about the last question is this. What's your opinion of Mike Tyson?
As a fighter or?
As a fighter and as an individual.
I'm going to give you all of it, okay? As a fighter, he's doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way it is. You're supposed to go out there and beat the guy up, take him out. That's the name of the game. But let's say as a young man and a champion, I don't think he's being, let's say, taught in the right way how to be a champion, how to be a fine man, because, you know, it's all right, Michael been doing these crazy things when he was a young man, but now Michael grew up to be a much older guy. I mean, I think that he can also think that that is wrong, whatever he's doing now. You and I didn't see him do it, okay? So now I'm just only saying what they say that he done, but if he is doing these things, I think that he should make adjustments. And the leadership. If you've been raised by a dog, you're not going around talking meow. Okay, so now the people that who have Michael, I think I need to sit down and let somebody else lead and show this man how to be a fine champion. That's in approach different people in the world. But he's doing the job as a fighter now. If he can get the other things straightened out, I think he'll be all right.
Okay.
Reggie, thanks for your call.
Thanks for calling.
Yo, and good luck to you.
Bye. Thanks.
6628780. Tony, you're on the air.
Joe?
Tony.
Hey, first of all, Joe, why don't you tell me something?
That voice is... your name ain't Tony.
Listen here.
What's your name?
You said something to a fella who tried to make you talk to him and use his new name. And you said, you are Cassius Clay.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth, Tony.
Your name ain't Tony.
Now, listen.
What's
your name? Now, when Angelo Dundee told me my
what's
name
your name?
Tony,
your name ain't Tony.
Joe said, no, it's your name as your mom gave it to you, and it's Freddie Brown.
Okay, I know your name ain't Tony. I know he is, Freddie. Freddie, how you been, man?
God bless you, Joe. I just want to say something for the public.
Okay, go ahead.
That man there, and I have to say this slow, I met in 1969. And he allowed this white guy to step in the ring with him, and he allowed to show me what it was to make a living inside those four corners. And when God lets any fighter step in them four corners, nobody knows what it's like in those four corners.
That's true.
But that man. And all I want to say is that you have got a fight on that show of yours that is one of the finest human beings, father, and champions that I've ever had the pleasure to meet. God bless you, Joe.
Hey, Freddie, I know that voice. You see that?
You did know who it was the whole time. That's great.
No Marvin, everyone high. All
right, man. Thanks for calling.
Thanks,
God bless you. All right.
It is true. Now, this one thing he said in the beginning was kind of funny. You refused. You will not say Muhammad Ali, will you?
Well, that's not really. Sometimes, I probably say Muhammad, you know, but then I look back at it again, you know, he done nothing but to try to hurt the black guys. And I look at the situation, what he have done to these guys, you know. He had all names, he had all animal names for us. We was rabbit, all right, bear cat, all right, bear.
Called you a gorilla?
Gorilla. Well, I act my part out. I act my part out, you know. But this wasn't necessary. And all these guys over the years... Nobody comment about it. Nobody say anything. They swallowed the bitter pills and went on with their lives. You understand? But then me, in 1969, 70, I'm not quite sure the years, that they took me inside of Washington and set me down to a long table like the Last Supper, all these businessmen who calls a shot in the boxing ring and asked me, says, Joe says, and now you the champion of the world. I think I just probably had to whip Ellis and said, how do you feel about the champ, you know, getting his license? And if you think he should have a license, we will give it to him. If not, we'll go on with your life and forget about it. I say, give him his license, wrap him up, and I'll take him out. So, and this was all about. Now, at that time, you know, we can call each other whatever we want to call. But when he got the license, he was a whole different champion, a whole different man altogether. You know, we planned places to meet for promotion shots.
And you still do?
Well.
You have done it recently.
Well, we have done it, let's say, before, you know, after he got his license, sure. But therefore, it was the basis that he didn't have to give us these names. Why did these guys look like him, a little darker, look like him, walk like him, does the same thing. Why we got to be an animal?
Why do you think he did that?
I don't have an idea.
Well, what did you feel like? I mean, it seemed to me that, and it all came back to me when I read your book.
Yeah.
That in the 60s and early 70s, because of the image that he would throw at you, call you an Uncle Tom, or traded to your race. Yeah. I mean, that must have, during that time, that must have hurt a lot. To have that. I mean, I don't mean in terms of you sitting there boo-hooing in your pillow, but I mean it just must have hurt a lot to have that thrown at you when you kind of saw yourself as champion of all the people.
I was born and raised in, let's say, poverty. You probably call it the ghetto. Can't get no poorer than me. I moved from the South, let's say, up to the North, and I lived like with my black people. I worked with my black people. When I didn't buy a job, I bought a couple jobs in New York City. When I do pay for it, I'd buy another job. So therefore, and being around my, I don't know anything. When this guy started talking about Uncle Tom,
yeah,
and a white man champ, I mean, what is this guy talking about? You know, I'm a part of this world. I'm a part of America. So therefore, we all are American. You know what I mean? I don't have nothing against it. I left that animosity, bigotry, hatred to live with my white brothers, my black brothers, whoever they are, I want to live with them. I try to get away from that stuff. And today, you wouldn't even know where I'm from. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love everybody. You know what I mean? But if I don't like a guy, I don't care what color be my brother. Me and my brother don't get along. Stay out of the house, brother.
But it didn't bother you a lot when that happened? It kind of weigh on you a little bit?
It been damaging me, like in the mind, but therefore, then sometime I get to the point and I can't get just an outrageous mad with people because it really wasn't the people who started this mess. It was him that started it. Otherwise, it was to the basis that he could not whip me. You see what I mean? So therefore, he fight me with words. He said, well, I know what I'll do. I get all the people to turn against him, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to beat me with words. But when the bell come, time come to fight, I say, you bring your lunch? I ain't going nowhere.
You know, when you wrote about, in this book, when you wrote that part about the first fight you had with him.
Right.
That chapter of the book.
Uh-oh.
That was just, I mean, I read it, and I said, you know, first sometimes when you prepare for a show, you try to read something, sometimes you try to read quickly because you got a lot of books to read. But then I didn't. I read this thing real slowly, and then I got to that point, and I just stopped and got into it. It was like you built that whole chapter was like built where you kind of built it up to a point of how the emotion of building up to the fight. And when you got to the fight, it was just punch for punch, round for round. It was the whole thing. You felt like you were watching all over again in that chapter. It was incredible. It was probably one of the greatest fights of all time, I think.
Well, the people that probably saw the first fight and they saw the last fight. Well, let's explain about the fights. That the first fight, the first one was so big, we shut New York down, okay? And the ticket was outrageous price at the time. The fight in Manila, they beamed it back, to the United States,
yeah.
Wherever, so you can see it. So maybe the younger people probably didn't see the 71 fights, but 71, not because that I won the fight, but I wanted clear and square, I mean, to some of the people around the world, you understand? But what happened there, Manila, they couldn't see because they beamed Manila back. They didn't see 71.
Right, right.
Because the kids was too young. But play the fight back now, the kids probably ask, Mama, Daddy, did you see 71? You said Joe Frazier didn't win 71 fight. What you were looking at?
That was the fight where Dundee threw the towel. Not Dundee. I'm sorry. Who was your manager then?
My manager. My manager.
Yeah, in Manila.
Fudge,
right?
Eddie
Fudge.
Yeah.
That was where Eddie Fudge threw the towel in.
Yeah. No. He walked in. No.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But it was. But at the same time, Muhammad Ali's corner was thinking about throwing the towel in at the same time.
He was thinking about the rerun.
Right.
See, he probably thought he was going to get 71 again, so I was going to clip him again in the last round.
I've never seen a fighter looking so beat as Muhammad Ali that day in his corner.
We had some good wars, there's no doubt about that, but I just can't go around and probably forget.
Well, I don't remember, I guess sitting here since I like boxing a lot, so let me just add, let me play the other side for a minute here.
Okay.
What do you say to people who say to you, look, boxing is a violent, ugly sport. It should be banned. We should not spend money or allow men to get in the ring and beat themselves to death. It is primitive and abhorrent, and it's not something we should have in a civilized society. What do you say to people when they say that to you?
Same thing going to Vietnam. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, you know, it's a clean switch. Look at me. I'm here. But one, the young man has to make up in his mind that he's going to live a clean life. He's going to do it right for the fight games. It's not just walk in and take a candy from a baby. They fight today for that too. You know what I mean? They're not going to give up that candy right away. So once you get to the bases, where you make up your mind that you want to be a champion, it's rules and regulations have to be, you have to abide by. I was just talking to Marvin Starr there about the situation. I think that the boxing body, when these guys sign up for a title fight or other fight, it should be a boxing committee going around and see if he's doing the homework, all right? I mean, in bed at time, at night, he's running him in the park, and he has proper training in boxing if they want to keep the game going. It's a clean sport. Look at me. I had 100 fights. I don't have no problem. 100 fights. I fought them, okay? And the main thing about it, but I lived with the rules and regulations because I love the game. I wouldn't want to see nothing happen in this game because it's a good sport. It's a one-on-one.
But you even supported your own son and other sons in the battle. To go in the ring.
I was a minister. All my sons are in good shape. I had three nephews. Those guys feel good. What's the problem? The leadership have to be there on the basis that if these guys don't want to live by the rules and regulations, then his license should be banned.
You're listening to my conversation with late boxing legend Joe Frazier. Going way back in our archives, many, many years, to bring you this classic. We'll take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, you hear the rest of that interview. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, sitting here with Smokin' Joe Frazier, former heavyweight champion of the world, and in my estimation, one of the greatest boxers ever to walk into those four corners. And Philip, in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
It's really a pleasure to talk to you. I'm a regular listener to your show.
Great.
And I think you do a fine job.
Thank you.
However, I'm a native of Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
I moved here to Baltimore 4 years ago. And I just wanted to say to Joe how much I really... I'm really honored, and it's a real pleasure to have him here. I've always been a big fan of his ever since the early 70s when I was a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is one thing I took issue to him. Me being from Philadelphia, and back in those early days of the late 60s and early 70s, he had a mayor that I thought was very hard on black folks in particular.
Rizzo.
Yes, Mr. Rizzo.
Uh-oh.
And it seemed to me that Joe was a little too close to him. I wasn't angry at Joe or anything, but I just couldn't understand why he would be so pally with this guy, while it seemed like he was beating black folks over the head. Hey Joe, could you tell me a little bit something about that? Could you explain that?
Philip.
What's that name again?
Philip.
Hey Phil, how you doing?
Fine, sir. Fine.
Hey Phil, I'll tell you one thing. In Philadelphia today, I think that the people, let's say you and I, you know what I'm talking about, would wish that we still had a Frank Rizzo around, and then we wouldn't have all those problems in the streets of Philadelphia, losing our black brothers and sisters by guys jumping out of the gun with Uzis and 9mm and firing on babies and stuff. You know what I mean? I think that the man was fair. We make the law, and then some of us break the law. As far as I'm concerned, you know, if you do wrong, whether you look like Miyagi, you're going to get time and you be put away. And I thought the guy was pretty fair to the neighborhoods and stuff. He didn't care who you were. As long as you were wrong, you were wrong. And you and I, or whoever it may be, you can't go around breaking the law and don't expect the law to do something about it. And I think if we would have our lawmen today to be more concerned about that, we'll have a better city where we live at for the kids to grow up to be young men. These kids today, if the law don't start getting a little stricter on those guys who carry nines and Uzi and 45s and 38, you see, I know all the numbers in it. It's gonna be pretty rough for your grand and my grand man to get along, because it's nobody keeping the law in order. You know, everybody else not calling the shot. And Frank was a guy. He was a fair man, as far as I was concerned. Did you get yourself in any trouble?
Oh, sir.
Yeah.
There
you go.
Those days, I
all right,
was
but
there.
You got out right. You got out safe and healthy, and you're a fine man, and you're down there in Baltimore, right?
Yeah.
Now, why would somebody else want to do something wrong and not this man take control of it and put him away? I locked him up. And then if you get out of hand, well, you might get hurt real bad. So now, if you could do that and I could do that, what's wrong with the other guys?
That's a good point.
All right,
hey,
Philip,
there you go.
Phil, thanks a lot. Keep on listening.
I sure will, Mark.
Appreciate you being part of the show.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 662-8780. Sandra in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hello, Mark.
Hi, Sandra.
Thank you for the lovely shows.
Thank you.
I would like to compliment Joe. He's such a great speaker. My comment is, please go and talk to kids in schools. There is so much need to hear about good stories and good life,
mm-hmm.
like you've had. I appreciate.
Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
I man.
Encourage you to get out there and talk to our kids in their schools and in the street.
Yeah, I probably can feel her pain because
mm-hmm.
I got 11 of them and I go away. Sometimes I do miss them, you know. And when I do get with the guys, you know, I laugh and have a good time with them, you know. But it's just, it's whatever happened within a home, man. It's daddy and mother have to call the shot. I know sometimes the child probably feel like mama and daddy being a little rough. But that's your position as mothers and father. You must call the shot. Sometimes they don't like what you're saying. But you the mother and the father, you must call the shot. They don't agree with what you're saying, but you the mother and the father, and you got to call the shot. Mom did that, and daddy did that for me and you, so why not you be a little rugged once in a while? They want to hear, yes, I can go, I can have it. No, if you don't think he should have it, then he can't go or she can't go. And that's the only way you're going to raise a child. Your position is mother and father, so take over. Don't let that kid think that you're the brother or the sister. You're the mother and the father.
Well, I think Sanchez was also trying to say that how much people like you are needed to get out there and be in our high schools and in our neighborhoods talking to kids and giving them some kind of inspiration about how to walk straight.
But, you know, what it is, Mark, it's not really not you and me. I mean, I go to the school and I talk for 35, 40 minutes to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't want to hear that. Trust me, they really don't want to hear that. The mother and father is a slave for that child in that home. They spend their last dime for a suit or wild shoes, and they don't string them up. A jacket costs $300, man.
You trying to say that Marvis was like that?
Yeah, Marvis wasn't like that. I didn't tolerate that stuff, okay? No, I don't believe in that. If Marvis wants something and mama said no, and I say, yeah, I'll say, well, Marvis, what did your mama say? Mama said no. I said, well, let me talk to her and maybe we come to agreement. But if we get back with the same thing, no, it's no. Don't come back and ask me again, because mama and I talked about it and it's no. That's what a family is all about. My mother and my father, my mother had love with child abuse. If she gonna beat you up tomorrow, 2 years from now, at the same time, she remember. She said, remember mama told you we're gonna beat you up next year this time? Mama, please.
Smoking Joe Frazier here on the Mark Steiner Show. Join us at 662-8780. You can also see Joe Frazier live this afternoon between 5 and 6:30 at Borders Books up in Towson. You don't want to miss that. He can sign your books and you can talk to him directly. And so get there with Smoking Joe this afternoon. Now you can talk to him right here at 662-8780. Let me ask you to talk a bit about a man who I know has a huge influence on your life, and I think was probably one of the finest fight managers ever to walk down the pike, Yank Durham.
Yank was a fine guy.
He was your man.
Yeah, you know, he was Yank was wild too, okay? Yank used to run a bootlegging business.
Oh, no wonder y'all got along so well.
Well, what happened before Marvin's time and your time, okay? I'm going to clean up. Yank and I used to, like, I'd go over his house. Back in 64, 63, somewhere down there, he used to tell me, he says, I got a package I want you to drop off to the house for me. I never know what the package was. He gave me a box. It was all wrapped up, sealed. So I go and take the package off. I said, now ring the doorbell. Yank, Mr. Durham said they gave you this package here. And guy stuck his hand in the door, grabbed the package, and I was gone. So I was more his deliver man with a bootlegger. Now I know what he was now.
But he was. Did he have a rough time? He was like one of the first black managers in a white world of boxing managers. You were one of the first guys to have a black manager. Folks didn't do that.
Well, Yank, at the time, Yank, we had like, no, it was all mixed as far as I was concerned with Clover Lake. Clover had blacks and whites, all this.
The corporation that joined behind you to push your career.
Well, right. Yank and I called the shot with the lawyer. That's why I can say loud and clear that we have nothing to do with what Don or these guys put together. The fighter, Don cannot do no more than the fighter, the manager, the lawyer.
Yeah, but Don King controls his fighters. It seemed like you had more control of your situation than his fighters have today.
No. Don can't do no more than whatever the fighter and the manager agree upon. He can't even fight a little bit. So nobody want him his head. Now, if the fighter wants to take over, maybe he quite don't understand what's on the paper. You understand? It's not, and maybe whatever he showed the fighter at the time, he probably didn't get a copy of it till two more days later. And the copy that he have, not the same copy that the other guy got, the original one. You understand? Mm-hmm. So before I leave, that paper have to be read to me where I can understand yes and no and how things should go. Don can't fight. Nobody would pay him to fight. But he's a promoter. He has to sign the contract with Marvis and you first.
I guess what I was trying... Well, I'm going to go to the phones. I'll come back to this talk. But let me say something about you before we go back to the phones.
Okay.
That my guest here is Smokin' Joe Frazier. And in many ways, Smokin' Joe is a modest guy and wouldn't kind of say this out front. And let me just say this about Joe Frazier. That when Philip, you called about Rizzo, and a lot of people thought Rizzo was a racist and didn't like Rizzo, Frank Rizzo. But when Frank Rizzo was a police captain in 1971 and Joe Frazier and his family were threatened after Muhammad Ali and started calling him Uncle Tom and all kinds of names, Frank Rizzo went out and guarded your family and took and make sure that nobody was hurt. And so politics aside, I think what the real truth was that Joe Frazier doesn't forget somebody's friendship when they come to help you. You're not going to turn your back on them no matter what the politics are.
It just wasn't like the guy was racist. You know what I mean? He didn't have a race problem. I mean, the guy wants to be the best mayor, the best chief of police in the world. And that's like being a champion of the world. You
but
want
you're
to
also
be the
kind of man who's not going to turn his back on a friend who helped you.
And he was a great guy. And he didn't call shots that wasn't fair. I mean, all the policemen in Philadelphia, when Frank took over, he didn't care if you were what color. If you were there with time and that you have that time over the captain or lieutenant, then you move up to admiral. That's I got it right?
Yeah, close. It's good enough. Yeah, okay. Admiral of the police, sure. Okay. the police, the sea captain of the police.
Okay.
That's right. Smokin' Joe Frazier. Join us here at 662-8780. And Cal in your car. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Cal. Go ahead.
I just wanted to compliment and thank Joe Frazier for providing me about 10 or 15 years worth of great boxing entertainment.
Thank you very much.
Very much. Always respected you and the era and the competition that you fought with and against, in my opinion, is, you know, unfortunately not in the industry these days. And a question, as I was sort of wonder. Whoa, hold on.
So don't have no accidents, man, please.
how would you equate today's boxers, the younger boxers, not the comeback artists, as far as talent against in your era, you know, yourself, the Ernie Terrells, et cetera, Pattersons, Ali's? How would you stack them up against your, you know,
I would say that today that men gotta be better today than yesterday. Now, maybe I don't think that some of the fans probably wouldn't like that, but men gotta be better. Look what they do to your heart. Take your heart out, put it on the table, open it out, put valves in it, put it back in you, and you're living and you're running, and everything start working again. You like that?
But what do you think of today's fighters compared to in your time?
What I'm trying to say about the fighters is the leadership is wrong. You understand? Everybody in the whole entire world, mama in the kitchen, doctor in the room, or wherever, wants to start training a fighter. Now, why can't we have guys like Mr. Moore, guys like Floyd Patterson, guys like Cassius Marcellus, if he wants to go around and call some shots, why not? Put back into the game that they took something out. Why all these guys calling themselves trainers, and half of them can't even fight. They never had a gloves on in their life. But they talk to a young man, which this guy is honest, wants to be true, wants to be a champion. He wants to be the best to this guy. Let me train you. He started training this guy. Never had a gloves on in his life. Now think about it. And this is what the problem lies.
Do you think that in today's fighting world that we have a better crop of lightweights than we do heavyweights right now? I mean, the lighter weight fighters seem to be better boxers, better fighters than some of the guys in the heavier classes. You think that's true?
I love you. I try to agree with you, but I would think no. I love you. But these guys, it's not the leadership is not there. It's just like the lady called in earlier and said, I need to go to the school and stuff. But my voice is not the voice that they need to hear. You hear what I say?
Yep.
My voice, the voice that these fighters hear, these guys, you know, some of these champions and some of these fighters can't roll a damn speed bag.
They can't?
They can't roll a speed bag because the guy who teach them can't roll one either.
Well, so you're saying that's the fault of the trainer and the manager, it's not the fault of the fighter?
Right. That's the fault of the trainer and the manager, it's not the fighter. How are you going to drive a car and nobody show you? How are you going to teach you how to drive a car and he can't drive?
It's a different. There is a difference between being able
they
to throw
don't, a... They don't take baseball players and put them on the basketball court. So why would they take anybody out in the street to train me if he never had a gloves on before? Or have you been rated to be a great fighter? You like to send your kid to school with me? To teach him?
Depends what you're going to teach him.
Think about
it. Depends what I want him to learn.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Right, right.
A school teacher.
Well, education. Who do you think are the best managers and trainers in the fight game today, then? Who do you think the top guys are who are training our fighters?
Well, for me to call names, I don't want to be that rough. You understand? Because it's not only the trainer. The trainer is the fighter. Okay? It's the way how he live. What do he do when he's out there in the street? How hard he work? Now think about these guys. Think about these guys never had a gloves on before. And I know there's a lot of guys out there. I've listened to fights, okay? You ready for this one?
Go ahead.
What are you doing out there? You want to win this fight for your mama? You want to win this fight? You got to fight. I ain't tell this guy one thing yet. I won this fight. Yeah. What are you doing? You gotta win this fight for my mama and yours too. Now come on.
I hear you.
Now listen, you out there, you got your hands down too low. I want you to bring your hands up. I want you shot. Let's say put them shots together. I want you to come over on that right hand with the guy at the jab. Body shot, double up. More than one shot. Move that head. Legs in position. Let's go. Get the job done. I'm telling her to win the fight. You're going to win this fight for mama. Thanks for calling, man.
Did you see that last, the last Tyson fight on, I think it was on television that, that happened? And one of the undercard matches was two women. Did you see the fight?
Oh, man, they were kicking.
What did you think of those women fighting?
They were smoking.
They were better than anybody that night.
Hey, Michael should have split the money with them. Bruno should give all his money to them.
I mean, what do you think of women boxing?
The lady was good.
They were good.
Now, whoever the trainer of those ladies, they good.
I never...
Those babes, man, been coming with counter shots. Some stuff I don't do, okay? Now, that's only because somebody trained them know about the fight.
I know if I met those women, I would say is, yes, ma'am.
And they stopped me in the dark. I said, what you want, baby?
They were serious. That was
that was fine.
I mean, they reminded me in some ways of your style of fighting because they just went at it. They were relentless. They just kept going through. They didn't pull back or stop. They were always going forward.
There was the one, the shorter one was attacking to the body,
mm-hmm.
and on the chin. You know what I mean? That's fair. Slow to, and it was the body shot too. The little blackhead.
Right. The one who won, the girl from West Virginia who won the fight, right.
She's fine. See, this is what it's all about. Now, if you could remember, when I was fighting, I was a marksman.
Mm-hmm.
I hit a guy from side up the chin line. Take him out, cut him right out of the air. when they didn't get me, I got them.
But you know, when you did fight, when you were in the ring, I think a lot of people don't know a couple of things about, two things I want to talk about when you were in the ring before we run out of time completely. Is one is that when you were a kid, you busted your arm.
Right.
So that your arm was always like permanently cocked and it was like stuck. You couldn't fully extend your arm, but you still went into the ring.
It's still there. It never been able to stretch out to extend to a whole full length arm. So my left foot could be thrown from here.
Right.
Yeah. Most guy had to like bring it back up here. I get like bang. Right?
Marvin, you marvelously become his punching bag now. Is that what's that? Now the other thing was that boy, he's beating up on his son here, right in the middle of the studio and stuff. When you fought, you also had a lot of serious medical problems that were going on with your back. You lost sight of your eye almost. You had cataracts, and you kept on fighting. Now, why would you keep on when your body and you couldn't see out of one eye, but you kept on fighting?
Well, I felt like the greatness of men is how they would design thing and, let's say, experience. I figured out one of these days that, you know, if I keep on fighting, I have the money in the position I could buy myself an eye, and I did. and I did. Let's say as time go by, I'm gonna go back in and get the other one done, and put an implanted lens in the right eye. But that's just how I see things, you know. That if a man takes his time and study himself, I think he can see what he wants to do, and he can see the future. But some of us is going so fast, going no way, trying to do something faster than we can do, you know. And sometimes we overshot our destiny.
If you were to give somebody some advice who is entering any sports arena now about handling their money in their life, because one of the things you didn't do, I mean, you handled your money. Your money was safe. And you made money on your money. You didn't lose it all. But a lot of guys go into sports and go into boxing and other things, and they have bad management, and they lose all the money they made. They never come out of it ahead.
It's to the point where that, you know, you have to listen. You know, I don't really think that any one particular fighter could be the trainer, the manager, the investment, let's say the publicity person. I mean, if you got a group of people with you and they have a job to do, I think that you should let them do their job. But once in a while, you know, when we get to be champion, hey, he tells me what to do with my money, okay? That's my money, all right? Just get out of my way. You had nothing to do with this. Don't tell me what to do with my money, baby. You know? And what it's all about, you know, I was the type of guy that You know, I pay my tax. I invest money. I take a certain amount of money to have fun and do whatever I want to do. That's my money, okay, to do what I want to do. But then I was thinking about time when Marvis was coming along, Jacqueline was coming along. These guys wants to go to college and do different things, you know what I mean?
Your kids you're talking about.
I could have something right. to give them, and that was the most important thing for my kids. And today, the money is so great. I mean...
The money now is almost... Good Lord, one fight in it, you don't need...
Give me a little mic, Marvis.
You give Marvis the mic? Well, actually, we're already running out of time before Marvis can even get to the mic. Marvis says, thank you.
We gone?
We're just about gone. Joe
the
Frazier...
The hour's up already?
Yeah, I'm sorry, man.
Phew.
Damn. His book is Smokin' Joe, an autobiography. If you love boxing, you want to find out about this man, this is a great boxing story. So get this book. Joe Frazier, thanks so much for being with us.
Hey man, it's a pleasure being here.
Pleasure to have you here.
Bye.
The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Mark Gunnery. Our producer is Imani Spence. Our research producer is Calvin Perry. Our production assistant is Nadia Ramlagan. Our intern is Morgan State Senior Michael D. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our theme music is by Juan Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast the Mark Steiner Show and share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. And for your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Have a great weekend. Talk to you all on Monday. Take care.